Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
And now a sensitive topic for some, but that's the problem, says our next guest. The most common bodily function shared by all women is too often considered taboo. They call it their friend, the time of the month. The English call it Aunt Flo. It's menstruation, and last month, Illinois became the latest state to enact legislation that expands access to menstrual products for poor and homeless women and college students. As he signed the bill into law, Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker released this statement: "Given the high price of menstrual products, it's no wonder that many women below the poverty line have had to sacrifice their personal health and hygiene in order to afford food, turn to socks and toilet paper to manage." Socks and toilet paper? Well, that made people sit up. Now, maybe they'd heard of what's being called period poverty, but in America? Yes, a national survey of 1,000 menstruating teens revealed that 1 in 5 reportedly struggle to afford menstrual products. 84% said they've missed school or know someone who has. Dr. Shelby Davies is with the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia's Policy Lab. They've been exploring period poverty, what women are going through, and menstrual inequity, the whys. For instance, period products are sometimes taxed as luxury items. Dr. Davies, welcome.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for having me today. I feel so passionately about this issue, and I'm so excited to be able to speak with you about it. I want to just pause at some of the numbers you mentioned, right? Those are pretty profound and staggering numbers here in the U.S. Yeah. And I think, first of all, we don't do a great job in this country of recognizing that period poverty is a problem. And the study you mentioned is really one of very few that have just started to look at this issue. And so let's take a moment and imagine that one menstruator who's experiencing period poverty. We know that that young menstruator, right, may have just had their first period, right? So they're probably in their early adolescence. I'm an adolescent doctor, right? So one thing that we are taught always, right, is among the really profound and exciting changes that take place during teenage years is the process of self-discovery, right? And so they're trying to answer what we call the two fundamental questions of adolescence: who am I and am I normal? And menarche, right, meaning someone's first period, is a huge, huge developmental milestone for so many youth. But even in this country, which is still so staggering, it's still connected to so much shame and stigma. I mean, so we do a poor job from the get-go at normalizing menarche, normalizing menstruation, which is really what teens at this age need.
I, part of me saying, still? Because, you know, I can remember, it was a long time ago, but I thought I was dying, you know, in a bathroom stall in school. And when I went home, my mother, you know, kind of quietly slipped me a book. Back then, people didn't talk about it. I think the fact that we're even saying these words on the radio now is probably, there are probably people wincing because it's not talked about. Is that still true?
Yes, yes. And I am so glad that you were able to share that story with us because, Robin, that is something that I'm still hearing from my youth. So imagine this one person just got their first period. They've never been taught what a period is. They weren't taught from their parents. They weren't taught from their doctor. And more importantly, they weren't taught in schools, right? We know that comprehensive sex ed is not something universally taught. So what does this person feel? Like exactly what you just mentioned. They feel alone. They feel scared, embarrassed. Many worry that there's something wrong with them, that they're dying. Or even worse for this age group, they feel like they're not normal. That is something that universally teens are feeling. But on top of that, imagine now that this person doesn't have the means to afford menstrual products, right? So things like pads and tampons that they would use each month. This person may go to school. They may try and use their tampon for longer than is safe or stretch out how long they're using a pad. But imagine trying to take a math test being so scared that you're going to have an accident right in the middle of the math test. Like, how do you focus on that?
Well, this brings us to menstrual equity, which is why are they unaffordable? Talk about some of the the reasons that they're unaffordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I'm lucky enough in Pennsylvania right now to be in one of the states that does not tax menstrual products as luxury items. But it is shocking how many states still have a tax on period products as a luxury item, especially when there are states that will tax pads and tampons as luxury items, but not dandruff shampoo or erectile dysfunction pills, right? So it is really an issue of gender inequities and discrimination that pads and tampons are still taxed.
Right. So, for instance, in Illinois, the new law, House Bill 641, requires state universities, community colleges, to stock feminine hygiene products in restrooms in a college building that serves students. It would require the Illinois Department of Human Services to apply for a waiver to the federal government to allow the use of SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs, to go towards, you know, diapers and menstrual hygiene products. It is that is also scandalous to many, that poor women are not allowed to use their federal money to purchase those products, which you have to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for many, it was actually, you know, bringing this back to the time that we're in right now with the pandemic, for many, just thinking about youth in particular, the population that I work with school closures, right? They were out of the ability to really access menstrual products in their school nurse's office, which already has a number of barriers associated with it. But when you take that away, it just makes them, or puts them in a harder position.
Well, this is one of the things that you advocate, that, you know, they be stocked in school nurses' offices, but a lot of schools don't have a school nurse. Talk about some of the ways to get past this. I mean, what can doctors do, for instance, during doctor's visits? How do we address the thinking about it?
Yeah, thank you. I love that question. And so you mentioned school nurses is one of the places that I advocate for access. And one thing I want to emphasize is that it really takes what many in this area or this field call a multi-pronged approach. One of the issues that I mentioned is increasing education around menstruation in schools, right, and advocating for medically accurate, age-appropriate, and comprehensive sex ed. I think another piece is the policy side. So really helping legislators make period products more available in restrooms, public restrooms, school bathrooms, and places like that. But I think the other piece, which is what I've been working on, is more studies, more comprehensive studies on period poverty, especially in young people. My work with the Policy Lab aims to use personal narratives to explore lived experiences of these youth. Many of what my teens have really identified as key areas, one is the school and the other is medical offices.
But you say you're collecting the living stories. Do you really meet young women in Philadelphia, in America, using socks, or, you know, unable to go to take a math test that day because they don't have menstrual protection? Is that, you really hearing that?
First of all, yes, I am hearing these stories. These youth exist, young women exist, who are facing these issues day to day, month by month. For many teens who I take care of, on top of that, just biologically, we know that teens are more prone to having irregular periods and more frequent, more heavy periods. So imagine how many period products one would use at baseline, multiply that, right? Because we know teens are using even more. But I think the other point that I would love to add is period poverty is kind of one extreme of a big spectrum, and that there are many youth, while there are many that are experiencing true period poverty, there are even more that are experiencing the financial burden of menstruation, who are experiencing this tax, or who are experiencing not being able to use government benefits on their period products, and that it's an added stress in their lives that can really have profound consequences.
Dr. Shelby Davies, an affiliate trainee at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia's Policy Lab, who explores barriers that women face purchasing menstrual products. Dr. Davies, thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad you were able to shed light on this issue.
And we'll link you up to the Policy Lab and their suggestions on how to fight period poverty at hereandnow.org.